Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions expressed on Wolf Dog Radio by our guests and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of the production team of the hosts of Wolf Dog Radio. We are open to your ideas for future radio programs. Please feel free to email us with questions or comments at questions@wolfdogradio.com.
Greetings and salutations. I'm Krista Ward, and welcome to Wolf Dog Radio. On this episode of Wolf Dog Radio, we will be visiting with Jerry Mills, discussing his experiences rearing and caring for puppies of all content ranges, from whelping through their first year of life. We are happy to be accepting callers with questions pertaining to the caring of wolf dog puppies. I will be making another reminder announcement further into the show to give our listeners time to call in to ask Jerry live questions. The call-in number is 646-668-2381. We will be right back after these messages from Purple Ark.
Purple Ark Rescue and Sanctuary is a private refuge for abused dogs. For the last 20 years, Purple Ark Rescue and Sanctuary has been operated from the home of Camille Christie Barber and her husband Joe. Joe works a long week at his job, and Camille stays home to care for the fur darlings. Purple Ark currently cares for and supports 14 dogs, 4 cats, and 1 possum who calls their porch home. Camille and Joe are magnets for injured and or needy animals who are fortunate enough to find their way to Purple Ark. Purple Ark recently took in a bait dog from Egypt. This poor animal had no back legs and was incontinent. They named him Bisou. That's spelled B-I-S-O-U, and it means kiss in French. The doctors in Egypt weren't sure if Bisou's incontinence would ever resolve itself. Expenses for Bisou's upkeep and recovery have doubled Purple Ark's expenditures. Did you know that Bisou has his own Facebook page? If you would like to follow his recovery and his journey, please go to www.facebook.com/blessedbisou. That's spelled B-I-S-O-U. Purple Ark Rescue also has its very own Facebook page, but Camille admits to spending more time with the animals than doing updates of late. She promises to be better about that. While not a 501c3, Purple Ark welcomes and appreciates donations of any amount or kind. Please support Purple Ark Rescue and Sanctuary at www.facebook.com/Purple Ark Rescue. On a personal note, on behalf of Wolf Dog Radio, we would like to thank Purple Ark Rescue and Sanctuary, and especially Camille, for all you do. Fellow listeners, please support this noble cause.
Hey, y'all. This is Jerry Emmelman, and you're listening to Wolf Dog Radio. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Hi, Krista.
Hey, Jerry. We're thrilled to have you on the show to discuss such an important topic, wolf dog puppies and care. With puppy season upon us very soon, I believe this episode is extremely important for our listeners. I'm going to ask you actual questions for discussion that I feel could be beneficial to anyone planning to have a litter or to take on a wolf dog puppy this spring. Let me introduce Jerry to our listeners. A lot of our listeners know Jerry Mills as the voice of Wolf Dog Radio's Chaos Den. He is that and so much more. Jerry has raised and bred wolf dogs of all content ranges for 3 decades. He's been active in rescue and has fostered animals off and on for years. Jerry is a past president of Lupine Legacy and a former member, board member of Florida Lupine Association, now National Lupine Association. Jerry has done educational events in his area as well as other states. Recently retired as a breeder, his focus is now educating and promoting wolf dogs in truth and ethics. He's also a dear friend of mine. The first discussion question I have for you tonight, Jerry, is at what age do you pull pups from their mother, and why is this necessary?
Well, I pull the high contents or the upper mids, and I also generally have always pulled my mid puppies at about 10 to 12 days of age. Right when their eyes start to crack open, you can go ahead and take them away from mom. The lower content puppies, it depends on how friendly mom is. You know, raising puppies is almost a full-time job if you really want to do it correctly. Even the fact that you're going to pull these puppies takes a lot of planning before mom delivers. Sometimes they're pretty friendly about taking them away. Sometimes they're not, and you have to have some way of separating them to where you can go in and get the puppies.
Why do you feel that it's necessary to pull the puppies at such a young age?
Well, it's absolutely necessary. If you want the puppy to be all it can be, they need to imprint on humans. You, your wife, familiarization with the house, the noises, the sounds, the TVs. It's just a socialization thing. It's an imprinting thing. It makes all the difference in the world. The higher the contents, the more important it is. It just sets them up for a much successful rate of when they get older and grow up.
Do you think that helps the bond between the puppy and the potential new owner if they're pulled at such a young age?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It makes the transfer much, much easier. It's difficult to say because, you know, the difference between one that hasn't been bottle fed and the ones that are. I've always bottle fed mine, but I've seen other people's animals that weren't bottle fed, and shipping them to a new home, it just sends them over the edge, and it takes a long, long time for them to calm down and get used to their new environment and their new people. The shipping alone is just absolutely traumatic. Now, the more people that can handle these babies, the better off you are. Then you run into this thing with, you know, tricks and germs and diseases in and out of your house. You have to make people take their shoes off. If you've got kids in the neighborhood, you can have them come over. The more people that handle these little babies, the better off they really are. It just makes it just a tremendous difference. It helps them to be all they can be. The ones that aren't bottle fed, eventually they tend to get used to their owners, but they just never get used to anybody else. And it's so hard to take them out and socialize them because they're just absolutely terrified. And sometimes it makes the bad matters worse, and you're just kind of stuck with what you got simply because somebody didn't bottle feed your puppy. And that also should go into your choice of breeder and who you're going to get a puppy from. You want to get the ones that are really, really doing it right. These little fellows are a lot more than how cute they are on Facebook or how cute their pictures are. They're real live little critters, and they're dogs.
I can relate to that last little bit that you said there, because I have an animal that'll be 3 this year that was not bottle fed, but she was a gift to me after I lost an animal, and that animal's companion needed another companion, and he is a feral. She definitely bonded to him, and she loves me, but she is terrified of everything else, and so she's the only one on the property that I'm aware of that most of mine are rescues that have not been bottle fed, and I can see a significant difference in her behavior versus the behavior of the other animals, even the higher content animals. She definitely acts more wild, and it's not necessarily to do with content. It's more to do with being pulled, bottle fed, and socialized. So I think that's a fantastic thing that you brought to the table to let new owners know to do their research. While I'm thankful she was gifted to me, so I'm not going to complain. It was a very nice gesture. But since we're talking about education, I think it's important for people to realize that if you're wanting a really social animal, you need to definitely have a bottle-fed puppy. So that was a very good discussion topic there. The next question you actually covered already, but I'll go over it. And it was what content wolf dogs should always be pulled from mom. And you had said definitely mids and above, and depending on mom, the lows as well. So you covered that pretty well.
If you had some unsocial lows or even some low content animals with issues, you know, not that they should be bred, but you know, a lot of people do. And even at that age, even with the lows, you're better off bringing those puppies in the house. That way,
absolutely,
you know, they don't pick up bad habits. And these little guys are smart. They perceive more than people think they do, especially as infants.
I agree fully. What kind of formula do you recommend using, Jerry? What do you use for your babies?
Well, I use it's an old formula. It's been around a long time. There's a couple of variations in it, but the one I use is a goat's milk formula. And I use the goat's milk from the store in a can. I don't use fresh goat's milk. There's too much bacteria and, you know, God knows what in it. The goat's milk in a can's never failed me. It's a 50-50 one can. Do you want me to give you the formula? Is that what you want?
Yeah, what do you mix in with yours, if you don't mind sharing?
Okay.
With the listeners.
Well, it's you get one can of goat's milk, and you get one can of water, and you get your container, and when you open, you shake it up good before you open it, because there's a lot of milk fat stuck to the bottom of that can, and you want all of that. And I always pour half a can, and then take a spoon, stir it up, scrape it real good, and get all the stuff out of it, remaining half a can into the container, fill that can up with water, you know, slosh it around good to clean the can and dump it in there. It's 50-50, one can of goat's milk to one can of water. I use a quarter teaspoon of Knox gelatin, and you want to put that in a little small cup with just a little bit of water in it, hot water, and that way it'll dissolve completely. If you just dump it into the formula, it makes knots and starts to coagulate, and it just really it stops up bottles. It's just not good. And to that, I add a small jar of baby beef, baby food, no salt, no garlic, no onions, just plain baby beef, baby food. And let's see, then you got two tablespoons of, I use Dannon unflavored yogurt. It's got the live bacteria, aids good in digestion, makes everything good. Take all that, put it in a blender, and give it a whirl. Of course, it's good to make up two batches. If you're just feeding one puppy, one batch will do you for a few days. It keeps good in the refrigerator.
That's interesting that you and I use the same exact mixture. I just add a little bit of Karo syrup to mine, depending on...
Oh, I forgot that, too. I'm glad you're here. Yes, a tablespoon of Karo syrup, absolutely. They'll stop up like a cork in a bottle if you don't put that in there.
They do. Very unique that we use the same formula, but it seems to really help, you know, health-wise with the puppies. They fatten up really well. They do well on the formula. And do you use any particular kind of bottle? Do you hold them a certain kind of way when you bottle feed?
Oh, yeah. There's where the expertise comes in. And it's, you know, it sounds funny, but, man, you got to get that bottle right. You got to get that nipple right. And I use the same nipples year after year after year. You know, you got one for one stage in their life, one for when you're starting them, and then one for when they're really starting to eat real well, and then the other one for when you're thickening up the milk. And it's a trial by error thing. You don't want to use one of these little teeny tiny toy baby bottles or a little mouse bottle or whatever they sell in Walmart. You want to go ahead and get a regular old bottle. And I don't use the high-tech nipple that's all flat and curved and contoured and all that. I use your standard basic nipple. And what you have to do is you have to make you up a bottle. You use warm water. You don't. It's got to be about the same temperature because that nipple's got to get warm. And when it gets warm, it gets softer, and the hole opens up a little bit easier. And what you'll do is, suck on it a little bit. And you're generally going to have to get a hot needle and open that hole up. But you don't want to open it up too much because if you do, the puppies will strangle. And, once you get it just right, and these little guys, even at that little tiny little boogers, they can really put a vacuum on something.
They sure can.
Absolutely. You can almost stick your finger in their mouth and let them suck on that. You can dang near pick them up off the ground. I mean, they've got a hold on it. They have got a hold on it. And
it's true.
It's trial by error, you know. And you should.
You never turn
you
them
gotta
off
hold
their
them
back.
On their stomach. That's right. You got to hold them on their stomach, and you got to hold them where they can put their little paws on both sides of that nipple, because that's how they do it. And you can't wrap them up in like little babies and feed them upside down. You'll kill them. They've got to be able to sit on their little butts with their paws on your hand with that bottle in their mouth. And sometimes, once you get to know your that particular nipple, sometimes you can just push in the side of that nipple where it connects to the bottle, that little bulbous part of the nipple. You can pump a little milk in there to help them get started, because every puppy's different. Some of them take to it like they know what it is, and other ones it just takes forever to get them to start eating. And but don't give up. Don't force them. Sometimes they don't want to, they want to. Sometimes they don't want to open their mouth. You can take your little finger, make sure you don't have any fingernails or anything, and you have to work it in between their jaws just enough to slip that nipple in and turn loose. And sooner or later, they get a hang on it. They get a hold of it. Sometimes when you bring puppies in, I've had them go 10, 12 hours and just sleep and sleep and sleep. You try to feed them, they don't want to eat. They just sleep and just worry you to damn death. But eventually they come to, and it's time to feed them. Start off feeding them every 2 hours, and you just expand that as it grows along. And that's the happiest day, one of the happiest days in your life is when them puppies sleep 6 hours, and then you get to sleep 6 hours.
I can relate.
Oh, yeah.
Should you start introducing solids, and what should you start with?
Well, I always start my puppies with baby rice cereal mixed in with the formula. That's when the third nipple comes in. It's bigger, and it's just a little bit in there, but it don't take much to stop a nipple up. And they got to pull a little harder to get it, so you want a little bit bigger hole. And just put a little maybe a teaspoon in a bottle. And go from there. And by the time they're 4 weeks old, I put them to a pan. I'll take the dry kibble that I feed my adults. It's a good brand. It's a good, healthy kibble. Put it in the blender. Turn it into powder. And put some of that in the pan. And put some of that warm formula on it and stir it up. And you better have some newspapers or towels or whatever, because they're going to make a genuine mess out of it, and they eventually get their feet in it, and they're all standing in it, and they just gather around the food bowl and go to it. And as time goes along, you just keep drying it up and drying it up. Usually by 4 weeks, they've got teeth, and they're wrecking a baby nipple.
I actually just thought of a question that I didn't have earlier. Do you add any colostrum to your formula at all?
No, it's not necessary. They got that from mom
okay.
The first couple of feedings. And I think their colostrum is good for like 2 days. The first 2 days, they're usually producing colostrum.
How early do you think that the new owner should get their wolf dog puppy?
Well, that's where your content ranges come in. And these genuine high content animals, you know, they are wolf dogs on paper. And they're wolf dogs through genetics or DNA. But they don't know that. And they don't act no different than pures. And I know there's laws in different states that you can't ship a puppy or have a puppy before they're 6 weeks old, 8 weeks old, or whatever. Well, that's all fine and good. But for the good of the puppy and the good of the animal, you know, I've had them at 3 weeks. I won't let them go before 3 weeks. And I've got puppies at 3 weeks. And then, you know, of course, the new parents take over the bottle feeding. And, you know, they come pick these puppies up at your house, and you show them, and you watch them do it. And, of course, you're not going to sell something like that to somebody that don't know what they're doing anyhow. But irregardless, you know, the high contents, that's what happens. The low-content puppies, I've seen them do great 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks old, you know. Of course, you socialize these puppies. If you're doing it right, they can make that. They can make it that long and go to a new home. There's not that much wolf there. But, you know, a little wolf goes a long way sometimes. But, of course, in the mid-content puppies, you know, I like to get them somewhere by the time they're 6 weeks of age. So there's a graduating scale from high to low. And, you know, a graduating scale of the length of time that they stay at home and go to the new parents. And all this is in the puppy's best interest, you know. It's not by request. It's not by some client or customer, you know, insisting that they get this puppy then or whatever. You know, you do whatever's best for the puppy. And a good, you know, good buyers, good owners, you know, that's their goal also.
Do you think that the puppy should be hand-fed? If so, when would you begin doing the hand feeding on the puppies?
Oh, absolutely. 5 weeks old, 6 weeks old. They got teeth. They know what, and that's what their teeth are for. And they wouldn't have them if they wasn't ready for them. And you start off with, I use hamburger meat. You can use ground chicken, like a chicken breast or deboned chicken, raw. And, of course, you got to stay, keep everything clean, keep them clean. But sooner or off, you definitely want to start hand feeding them. And you want to continue to do that. I've had animals that were like Maverick. He was 3 or 4 years old. He'd never got a piece of meat in his life that it wasn't handed to him. It's pretty funny. I left one time and I had a buddy of mine they were good friends. He just lived not too far from him, and he was real familiar with him. Maverick was a 98, by the way. And he went to feed him. And instead of handing him his chicken, he put it on the ground, four leg quarters on the ground. And Maverick looked at him and looked at them leg quarters and looked at him. He didn't touch them. Dave was still there the next day. He called me and told me, he said, "Maverick's not eating." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I gave him his chicken. How'd you give it to him?" He said, "Well, I put it on the ground." I said, "You got to hand it to him, dude." He thought that was the most insane thing he ever heard in his life. But, you know, there's no food aggression there. And some, you know, some of these animals have food aggression. Some of them don't. Some of them get over it real fast. Some of them don't. And your best bet is to, you know, you want to control the situation at all times and be on top of everything with these little guys. Because they're on the top of their game when their eyes are open. They are at the peak top of their game every waking hour of their day. And you need to hang in there right there with them. And, yeah, it's a pain. And if you work, you better have somebody else there to take care of it for you. You're going to get out of it what you put into it. And you want the most of the most. These guys get big, and they grow up. And at some point in time, they're big enough, they realize they ain't got to do nothing you tell them to do. So you really want to make that impact and teach them that the way the world rolls when they're that little, and that includes especially hand feeding, whether it's kibble, meat, you know, high value stuff, huh?
I fully agree with you. I can relate to you there. I've hand fed anything that I've raised from, you know, a baby, and I have one that I can still take away from him out of his mouth, and then the other, although she was hand fed as well, would definitely challenge me. So sometimes, you know, they still are stuck in their ways, like you said, and then you have some animals that respect that relationship with you a little bit more, and but I definitely feel like that's very important with new owners, so that that's another form of trust, and I think that is fantastic that you had that bond with Maverick.
Absolutely. You know, you're going to get bit. So if you're going to get bit, it's best to get bit by a puppy instead of waiting until they're full grown.
What brand of kibble can be used, if any, when raising puppies?
I have always used the Diamond Natural Extreme Athlete formula. It has just done great with them. I'm sure there's a lot of people that use different stuff, and you know, I've tried it all, and the more expensive it is, the better they like to roll in it. And that's just my guys. I don't know, but it's always been that way for me. And it's a good meat-based, soy-free, grain-free, got good fat content, and that's what I use. And I don't use a puppy formula. That's what I use. If the puppies, you know, you can grind it up a little bit in the blender and let them have it. The mouse is not that big, even when it's dry.
That's exactly the same exact food that I use for my babies as well, and they've all done really well on it. We don't have any issues with, you know, runny stools or anything. It seems to set well with them, and it's cost effective for any new owners who are looking for something that, you know, they don't want to break the bank. I definitely agree with you that that's a pretty good kibble to start with, and to keep them on
it. Here it runs about $1 a pound. And, you know, I supplement. They don't get just straight kibble all the time. They'll get kibble 2 or 3 days, and they'll get chicken. When it rains, they always get chicken. Otherwise, they get their dry. And they like it. They eat it up.
How do you feel about alpha rolling puppies, Jerry?
Well, you know, we're not wolves. We're not dogs. We're humans. And you're not fooling these little guys by doing that. Of course, mama might do that. But if you watch real closely, mama don't do much of that either, you know. I don't believe in it. You know, you're supposed to be smarter than a puppy. And there's no reason to get physical with a puppy. And if you've got to get physical with that puppy, then you're screwing up. And you need to call somebody.
Go ahead, Jerry.
I was done. I just said that alpha thing's out and done. That's not how it's done.
What about muzzle, you know, pinching the muzzle with your fingers when they're little puppies and they're trying to nip you and things like that? From some research that I've read, some owners believe that pinching on the muzzle is kind of like a mother grabbing the puppy by the muzzle to correct the puppy. Do you agree with that form of correction?
To a certain extent, yeah. But that don't make the puppy think that you're a wolf or a dog. That's just a correction, you know. I've heard of idiots that bite them on the ear, you know, and that just, you know, it might work for them, but it ain't happening on my watch, you know. It's just not necessary. Like I said, he's supposed to be smarter than that little puppy. You ain't got to bite him. You ain't got to squeeze their nose and make them holler or step on their foot when they jump up or any kind of stuff like that. There's other ways to show them that that's unacceptable.
Do you have any advice that you can give on corrections at an early age for maybe a puppy that's a little more dominant than the others in the litter and maybe is already tested?
I've always, and it's worked 98% of the time, is, you know, when they go to chomp down on you and bite on you, they don't know how hard they're biting. You know, two puppies is much easier than one. They bite each other and find out. That shit hurts. So, you know, when they go to biting on me, I'm not going to holler over this stone, but if you holler and startle them and push them back, make sure they don't realize it, that they'll make a game out of it. Because some of them, you can push them back, and they'll come running right back and do it again. And you have to repeat the process. And if that don't work, then pick their little butts up and put them in their puppy pen. I use a playpen in the house on the floor and, you know, correct them like that. And some of these little suckers are just incorrigible, and it takes a lot of patience. And, you know, I've got one right now, Mr. LaRue, and he was the hardest puppy I ever raised out of any animal I've ever had. And he's the only one that was produced by that pair that has been that way. The rest of them have been just ideal little guys, you know, normal little puppies. And I've told him 100 times, it's a good thing I kept you, boy, because if I'd sold you to somebody, you'd ruin my good reputation. He is high-strung. Oh, he's just a little asshole. And he was. And he bite. And I got to where you just have to put up with it. You know, you can be quicker than him. Move your hand, pick him up by his little scruff, turn him around, send him the other direction. Stand up. Stop putting your hands down there. I've learned all kinds of things. You know, just disengage. Just stop. Give him something else. Not as a reward, but give him something else to do. And it eventually paid off. And, you know, it's funny, and I'm not going to lie to nobody or try to be something that I ain't or somebody I'm not. And LaRue is just the sweetest, sweetest animal. He loves kids. He's seen tours. He don't meet no strangers. He is a perfect example of a social high content, except that food. And it took until he'll be three this coming season. And it took until just a month or two ago that he wasn't possessive over his dadgum dry dog food. Other than that, he was good to go. But what do they call that, Krista? Resource guarding? He was a king of resource guarding. Yeah, he got the crown, first place ribbon. And that's something some of them you can't get it out of them. They just have to wear, it just has to wear off. And as he's starting to mature pretty good now, and he's finally realized, and wolves do, and high contents of wolves, they don't make a lot of wasted motion. They don't stay after something any longer than it's worthwhile. And this behavior just got him nowhere. I stopped begging him. I stopped talking to him about it. I stopped scolding him over it. I just tell him how stupid. You're just stupid. You're just stupid, LaRue. This is stupid. And in that tone of voice, and feed him and walk off. And it finally dawned on him that, hey, this ain't getting me nothing. So I'd reach in there and feed him out of his hand, give him one piece of kibble at a time. Treats that he'd try to take your fingers off, you can lay them in your hand. He's just sweet. He finally got past it and it finally become his idea. And I figured he would. Because he's not actually stupid. He just is what he is. And they're all different. And you never know what you're going to end up with. You can pretty well be sure. Just like me with these other past puppies. You know, you've got, just for example, you got 20 puppies and one that's hard-headed. You know, you can be pretty sure about what you're getting. But you never know if you're going to get that hard-headed puppy or not.
What age do you think the puppies need to have their first vet visit?
Well, I always try to take mine in around 6 or 8 weeks, have them check for worms, a little too small for a shot by then, maybe 8-10 weeks old. I'll get, let them get a shot. And, of course, you get a follow-up 2 weeks later, another booster. But they do need to be checked, definitely need to be checked for worms. That just devastates little puppies. They don't get their nutrition, and it just really screws them up. They're tender little guys. Tough as they are, they're still tender little guys. They're just babies.
They are. They are. Another question kind of along the same lines would be, how do I start socializing my puppies safely without risking transmissible diseases?
Well, you know, car rides, keep you some wipes with you, baby wipes, alcohol baby wipes, keep those with you. Well, nowadays we got hand sanitizers, you know, and you can take them out, don't put them on the ground. And, you know, it doesn't hurt to let people touch them or hold them or anything else. Of course, you don't want some idiot holding your puppy, but, you know, you figure out who's cool and who ain't and let them handle it. Another good thing is, you know, if you've got a lot of little kinfolks, kids, nieces, nephews, and their friends, invite them over for a puppy pet as often as you can get them and get them there. You know, some of the best socialized puppies I've ever seen in my life, and I've seen plenty of them, come from John Basil because of his business. And those puppies are literally handled by hundreds of kids. And the ones that I've seen have come out of there are just as gentle and bulletproof as a dog. And
when do you think that you should start putting... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Krista.
When do you think you should start introducing, like, collars and leashes and kind of trying to get them adjusted to the leash and things like that?
You know, I've never had a problem putting a collar on one of them. You would think that they wouldn't like that, but they just really don't care. Even the adults really just never have seemed like they cared if you put a collar on them. Not a leash, is a different, whole different story. You know, when they're 10, 12 weeks, they don't have a collar on them. Let them get used to it. You can put it on, take it off, put it on, take it off. That in case they don't like it, they will realize that, well, he's going to take it off here pretty quick anyhow. So I just like putting a saddle on a horse. When you first start saddling a horse, you throw it up there, let it sit there for a little while, take it off, and just repeat. It doesn't hurt for them to trail a leash. 10, 12 weeks of age, that's not too early. You know, introduce it to them, show them what it is. You can sit on the floor and play and, you know, put it under your foot or just hold it in your hand, and they'll realize that the boundary of the leash and what's all that about. So that way, when they grow up, it becomes natural. It's nothing new. You start it before they even have, they can think back that far and remember when it starts. That way, that's just a natural part of their life. The leash is your friend. A leash is just absolutely awesome for these guys. It gives you control. It makes them listen to you. It's hard if you can't teach them, especially one of these hardheads, you can't teach them anything until you teach them to listen to you and pay attention and look at you. And once you get their attention and get them to look at you for whatever, then you can show them something. But until then, it's just futility. You've got to get them to pay attention to you. And treats are cool. To get them to pay attention and all that, gets them started, but they need to pay attention to you whether you got a treat in your hand or not. But that does get the ball rolling. And I'm not a trainer of any kind. You know, I'm more of like a behavioralist type guy. You know, I don't know a lot of training tricks, but, you know, I know a few people that do. And that's why you pick up the phone and call somebody. If you don't know, you better ask somebody. Because ain't nobody suffering over your ignorance but the puppy. And pride goes out the window. You got to do the right thing. There's no shame in the game if you don't know something.
You know, I think that's how you and I met initially, was when I got my first high content Ayashi, and I thought I was prepared because I had many contents in the past, but little did I know that she was going to teach me a whole new understanding of dogs. And you told me I could call you anytime and gave me your number, and you were always there when I needed somebody for advice. And I think that that's an important thing for anyone who's going to get a puppy, is always reach out to someone. Never be afraid. Your questions are not stupid. You have to start somewhere,
right.
And you have to rely on other people to be able to help you. And you only fail the animal if you're not willing to reach out.
That's right. You know, I've made hundreds of phone calls. You know, when I first started this, it cost you money to call long distance. It cost you money to call, 20 miles from the house. You're paying for long distance. And I didn't hesitate to make that phone call, because when you need to know, you need to know right then. And I had people I would call, and still do, if I need, if there's something that gets out of whack or just about something off of something. I think me and you've talked about stuff just for nothing else, just for shits and grins, just to bounce stuff off. It makes you think, and you pick up stuff, and all that does is make a better relationship for you and your animal.
It furthers your knowledge, and then, you know, that leaves the new generation to be able to help the upcoming generation. So it's always good to have people you can rely on, and I hope that everyone listening realizes that we are a giant network, but most everyone is receptive to helping one another when it comes down to doing the right thing.
Well, they really need to be. You know, this you know, everybody fights like dogs and cats on these stuff, but there's probably a couple of people that if the animals involved, I'd help them. Other than that, I wouldn't answer the phone. But if they had an animal problem, they're my worst enemy. I will do my very best to help that animal. I sure will, and go out of my way to do
it. That's what it's about. We have two questions remaining tonight. I wanted to just let the listeners know, if they wish to call in with a question, now would be the time. The number to call into is 646-668-2381. Again, that is 646-668-2381. And we will take as many calls as time allows. And thank you. Jerry, I'm going to get back to the questions.
Okie doke.
Is a high content good in the house? If not, then how do I introduce one to another canine?
I'd rather have an elephant in the house than a high content wolf dog in the house, I swear to God. You know, the elephant, he'll get up and just walk through your wall and be done with it. It's over. You know, these suckers here, they will slowly but surely destroy everything you own. That's just the way they are. Absolutely. They're worse than monkeys and raccoons, and they're just horrible, horrible. I've had them chew holes in my wall while I wasn't watching TV and not watching them, and oh my God, where are they at? And you get up and look, and they're down there with their head stuck in the wall where they've done chewed a hole in the middle of the wall, big enough to stick their head in, just to see what's in there. There's nothing that they won't do. Jerk your curtains out, jump out through the windows, turn your TVs over, pull the carpet up off the floor. I don't know how they've managed to do it, but I've heard of them tearing wood laminate up off the floor. That's just what they do. They're incorrigible. If there are instances of people that do keep high contents in the house, these people have got a lot more dedication for it than me. And they, you know, I've done had all my stuff wrecked two or three times. They ain't wrecking it no more. Just to prove a point. I've seen people with cinder block furniture, pallet furniture. You know, if they chew up the pallet, they go get another one. I've got an owner of mine that he's got one of Ruckus and Josie's puppies, and she still got her own bedroom, and she still comes in at night and sleeps in that bed. But you know, there ain't nothing in that room but that bed, and she's done it since she was a baby. And they already went to the used furniture store and then back to the garage sales to get more furniture and then back to the more garage sales to get more furniture. And they thought it was hilarious, and that's great. And it, but, you know, she's outside in the pen with another wolf dog now because she finally grew up, but she still comes in to sleep at night. You know, I was taught a long time ago by a dear friend of mine, Christine Burkett, and she must have told me this 1,000 times, don't never speak in absolutes, don't never say never. Because as soon as you do, there's an animal somewhere that's going to make a liar out of you. There are exceptions to every rule, except, you know, what Mother Nature dictates. And some people can do some awesome, awesome things with these animals. They're way better at it than me. But high contents in the house, I'd say 99.9%, absolutely not.
How would you recommend introducing a high content to another canine? You know, let's say someone obtains a high content. I guess it would be different introducing a puppy to another canine as it would an adult high content to another canine. Could you go over
Absolutely.
What your idea would be?
Absolutely. Well, you know, there we go again with the leash is your friend. And these animals, they're very curious. And a lot of times they'll get along. You can introduce them through the fence and everybody's wagging tails and everything's all cool. And then you get them outside of the pen and then you, you know, you got a leash. You got to have somebody strong enough to hold them. And introduce them on a leash and let them interact, and everything's all cool. And then you put them in the pen together, and everything's just great for 2 or 3 weeks. And all of a sudden, you go out there, and one of them dead. That high contents done killed it. Adult animals like that, very difficult. You never know when the worm's going to turn. Everything, it's high contents and low contents. It's just not worth a chance. And there's people that's got them that's raised them together, done great till they get up. The high content grows up and matures, and then you gotta separate them. I've done that plenty of times. I got a dog at the house now named Dusky. He's a lab mix, and I raised him with Josie Mae, same age, and they were just the best of buddies. She just absolutely loved him, and they went from buddies to him being her play toy, and she would drag him around by his head. And you know, he's 35, 40 pounds by then. He still just thinks the world is just great. And she's getting more and more frustrated with him. And I finally separated him before it got too bad. And ever since I've separated him, she still runs and charges up and down that fence. They got an alleyway that's 5 feet wide between them. And she charges up and down that fence. He still thinks she's playing with him. And if she could ever get a hold of him, she'd kill him in a heartbeat. She acts like she just absolutely hates
it. So you believe the language barrier is very different between a regular canine and a high content?
That is absolutely it. That is absolutely it. Even as humans, you know, I make examples out of things, and I explained something along these same lines to somebody the other day. They said, well, why do you think that is? Why is it the language? Well, what does that got to do? Well, you know, it's not just that, but it's body language, vocalizations, purpose in life. It's two totally different purposes in life. And it's like you've been stuck in a living room with a family of Vietnamese, and you have no earthly idea what's happening. Do you think you could spend the rest of your life in there with them people before you went crazy? No. Sooner or later, it'll drive you out of your ever-loving mind. And, you know, these dogs don't teach each other's languages. You know, they don't, you know, teach each other how to speak dog or how to speak wolf. That just don't happen, and it frustrates them. And it's just not a natural thing. And, you know, of course, then there's that degradation between high contents and low contents. The low contents, you're going to have a lot of luck with it because you've got a lot of dog there. And it just progresses up, and the balance just gets more and more out of whack until it just don't work. As pups, that's easy, you know. And if you want to try to you know, introduce one to the other. Like I said, you go through the fence, and this don't happen in a day. You got to give it some time, you know. Let them get to playing and really wanting to get, they'll just want to get over there to the other, and just begging to get over there to the other. And then you put the leash on and introduce them that way. You don't just bring too high contents, you just don't bring one, even male and female, you just don't bring one home, just dump it in the pen with the other one. It don't always work.
I think I called you about this question, speaking about just a few weeks ago when Ayashi passed away, and my high content male Taz has been alone, and he shares a fence line with my upper mid female Katniss, and they always play through the fence, and I did a slow introduction a couple of days in a row, and they acted fine, and then I think I called you after 2 hours because they just started fighting uncontrollably off and on, and your advice was, you know, separate and never put them back together.
It's not worth it.
It wasn't
right.
A good idea. Yeah. So I think that's important. Some animals, especially high contents, as sensitive as they are, they bond to their mate, and it's probably not a good idea to introduce another adult animal while he may be accepting to a puppy at some point in his life. You know, he's sensitive to other adults because he's set in his ways, and I think a lot of people don't understand that that's where a wolf dog differs from a dog is, you know,
absolutely.
Once they're set in their ways, they're not so forgiving and accepting of new situations.
Well, you know, these enclosures are their homes. To you, it's your enclosure that you have your dog in. But to them, that's their home. And all that's their stuff in there. And sometimes they're willing to share, and sometimes they're not. Sometimes it's like company coming over, you know. And after a while, you know, they're welcome to anything. Then after they've been there a while, or then next day, and then they're like, dude, you need to go home, man, you know. And they're kind of the same
right.
way about that stuff. And some people, you didn't mind if they'd come in and stayed and just never did leave. They just fit in your environment, and everything's just cool with them. And but that's seldom the case. That's seldom the case. And something else I wanted to mention, you know, you talked about Ayashi passing away. And, you know, I've had these guys a long time, and every one of them just absolutely take your heart, and you're just totally infatuated, deeply, endlessly in love with them. And you raise them from puppies, and then to the end of their life, and they get old, and then they pass away, and you got to dig that hole and cover them up. And when people get these puppies, you need to keep that in mind, because that's really hit home for me personally. Because now that I'm not getting any more animals, and I've got several that are really old, that's just been my heart. And I'm, you know, I keep telling everybody, you know, I still got a lot of holes to dig, and it's tough. It's hard, and it's something you never get over. And how many times can you get your heart broke? Because it breaks them every time. And
it does.
You know, there's tears in every grave. And these puppies are going to grow up, and they're going to die one day, and you're going to have to bury them to get a lot of animals. And sometimes it don't work out. And once you've got them and you're in love with them, that's it. You know, but you need to, you know, first time puppy buyers, people's had two or three wolf dogs that's gone and passed away, and you know, you can deal with that. But you know, you get the numbers that me and a lot of other people are, you know, it's a lot of holes, it's a lot of heart, that's a lot of heartbreak. And, you know, these puppies don't stay puppies forever. They do grow up, and they're not puppies no more, and they're not puppies for long either, you know. And they turn into whatever it is they're going to turn into, and you're stuck with them because you like them and you love them, and you're just stuck with them.
Oh, my gracious, that's the truth. We have our first caller, Jerry.
Okay.
Caller, area code. Hey, welcome to the show. And
I'm
what
not
is your question
anything.
Tonight? Caller from area code 817. Can you?
Oh God!
Turn your radio off,
please. Hello.
Hey.
Oh my God. Oh, I was just listening. Hi, this is Katie Beaver.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Okay. I'm good. Sorry, I didn't realize you were talking to me. Sorry, I was just listening in. I didn't know how to listen in on the computer. Anyway, I really enjoyed everything so far.
Cool.
I missed the first 20 minutes or so. So I'll probably have to figure out how to go back and listen to that. I don't want to repeat any questions.
It doesn't matter, Katie.
Okay. One question I do have, since we're talking about older wolf dogs passing away, what is your recommendation if you do have an animal pass away and you can really tell their mate is having a hard time, they're mourning, they're sad? Would you ever want, in any case, to try to find them a new companion? Or, I mean, just like
well,
you were
you
talking
know,
about.
It's kind of like this, you know. Say, you know, you're married and your wife passes away. Well, you're going to mourn. If your friend passes away, you're going to mourn for a certain length of time, and there's a healing period there, you know, and you got to give them some time. They may not want another animal there when they ain't got over the other one yet, and that's
right.
When you have to really kind of read your dog. And
hey, Katie?
Yeah?
Hi, this is Greg Larson, one of the producers. Could I get you to turn your volume down on your computer, please?
Oh, yeah, it's my phone, sorry.
Well, if you're listening on your computer, it's kind of doing a reverb with your computer if you're listening there.
Oh, it's my car radio, sorry. Let me take it off speaker.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
Sorry about that. I wasn't expecting to be on the line.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. There's a period of mourning, and you got to allow them to do that, you know. And after, you know, several months go by, and if you think they would want another companion, then you can always try them with one. But if you're going to get them another companion, you need to get a little trial run on it. You know, you don't want to go ahead and buy the dog or get a rescue and bring it home and then try it out, because it might not work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
Yeah, you always have to be prepared for them to not get along,
and then you've got a whole other animal. Yeah, then you build another pen, then you got two animals that need companions.
Right.
You know.
In the case where...
You don't want a pen. You don't want a bunch of pens out back with experiments in them.
Right. I suppose, you know, worst case, if you do have an animal that, you know, has their mate pass away and they're not accepting of a new pen mate, maybe you just need to spend extra time with them, make sure they're not lonely. I mean,
yeah,
we're
give
basically
them what, give them
their
what
world.
They need, you know. Yeah, you give them what they need. That's when knowing your animal and experience comes in. You know,
right.
you give them what they need, give them what they want, you know,
mm-hmm.
As long as they're not wanting the wrong things, you know, give them what they want. And oddest situations occur. Sometimes one pops up, you bring them over there, and it's just like a dream made in heaven.
Right.
But it's best to see how accepting they are of new animals, you know. And being accepting, there we go back to this thing again, you know, being accepting of them outside their enclosure is two balls of wax. It's a different ball of wax when you put them in there together and, you know, you done moved one in with the other and didn't even ask permission.
Definitely.
Hope they get along, you know. So, fine line tread.
I'm going through this now, Katie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going through this now. I had two high contents together, same age, been together since they were about 10 months old, and Yashi passed away in November, and her pen mate is grieving horribly. He's howling all night and all day, and I work full-time, and I'm a mom, so it's very difficult for me to spend as much time as I would like with him, and I tried another animal in with him, and it he didn't accept her, but they are both dominant personalities. So, you know, I've had people offer puppies and things like that, and it's just kind of like I really need to fill out what he's needing. I do think he wants a companion. I do think a puppy is in the best interest, but you have to know your animal, and Taz is a very intense animal. Taz is a very dominant mm-hmm. animal, even with myself. So I think being able to read your animal, what kind of personality they have, will determine a pin mate in the future. As Jerry had said, you know, is it going to accept an adult or a puppy, or it may never accept another animal, and you have to be on your toes when you have an introduction to make sure that
Definitely.
No one gets injured, including you. But I think that was a fantastic question. Very good question that you asked. It's very informative, and there's no definitive answer, as Jerry had said. It's just
right.
dependent
there's,
upon
there's no...
the animal.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm glad I accidentally ended up on the air.
Do you have any other questions for us while you're on the line?
Oh, gosh. Well, I don't know if this was covered already. Going back to the puppy topic, Jerry, what are your thoughts on when you pull puppies? I've heard of some high-content breeders that pull them very soon at maybe like 5 days old. I've heard of some that do it more at like 10 to 14 days. What's your approach?
I generally let them go until their eyes start to crack open, and
okay.
then out they come.
I have had to
raise one from 1 day of age that mom didn't accept, and
okay.
It's not that you can't do it, but they are better off, and they are better off with their mom until their eyes open. And the whole object of pulling the puppies is before they see mom and get that bond. And something
okay.
else I'd meant to say that I never did say, you want to start handling these little puppies as soon as she'll let you put your hands on them. If you have to
Definitely.
Move, if she won't let you handle them, you have to be able to move her to another enclosure or trick her out of that pen into the alleyway or between two pens or whatever you got to do. You need to be set up to do it, that you can go
mm-hmm.
in and put your hands on these puppies, because they go by smell and touch, and
right.
they will recognize you after a time or two. They will recognize you, then it doesn't startle them, and there's no difference between you handling them than her handling them.
Is there ever an age where you're most comfortable having strangers come in, or, for example, while they are still developing and they have closed eyes, do you only prefer you and your family with them, or
I've got people that have been active with me from children, and then come out in a church group, and they come out a couple, two, three times a year, every year, and some of them are going into the military, some of them are married now, and they started off as kids, and they have consistently come over, and they bottle feed them too. The more people
awesome.
That you can have trust to do that, as long as there's no harm to the puppy, you know, you take your shoes off at the door, wash your hands, get your bottle, and get after it.
Awesome. Well, that's
thank you,
that's
thank
very
you for your questions.
Yeah.
I'm very
thanks.
Thankful that you called in. we are thrilled to have you on the show tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay.
Are you ready for some questions from our email listeners, Jerry?
Sure.
All right. The first email is from D-Cell, and the question is, what, in your opinion, should be the number one quality a breeder should look for in his breeding animals? Should it be temperament, looks? What do you think?
Absolutely, without a doubt, temperament. They're all pretty. Some people have preferences in colors, and I have seen people just really screw up because they absolutely wanted a black wolf, or they absolutely wanted a one of the grizzled fall autumn leaf colored animals, and that's what they shop for. Nothing wrong with a preference of color, but It doesn't matter how beautiful something is. If you can't handle it, if you can't deal with it, if they're snarky, if they got bad personalities, bad traits or something, you know, these ain't something you sit on a mountain and look at. It's not a picture you hang on the wall. You've got to be able to deal with these animals. And you don't shop for them like you shop for a car. You shop for them. You got to have that. You got to have the right personality and the right temperaments.
I agree.
And that's something you
got
to be sure
question.
Of. You know, it goes right back to if you don't know, you better ask somebody. You know, people talk people into the wrong thing, as we well know, all the time. I've known some top breeders talk first-time buyers and insist upon them getting one of their high contents. And then some of them don't even have they ain't even got the right enclosures and stuff. You've got to make sure that you're being told the truth nowadays more so than ever. So you want to do your homework. A good breeder won't have any problem with you just spouting off a few phone numbers. Call these people. They've got my animals. See what you think. That's the kind of people you want
Very
to deal
good.
With.
Your second one is from Ann Weber. Dear Jerry Mills, when do you begin socialization and how do you do it? Is this something that you just do, or do the new puppy buyers have to learn how to socialize the puppy?
You know, when you're selling a puppy to somebody, you want to make sure you get somebody with good experience. And if they've just kind of halfway got their feet on under them, well, you help them. And socialization, we've talked about socialization. It starts from before their eyes open. And there's no such thing as too much socialization for these animals, because you've got just a certain length of time to teach them to do whatever it is they're going to need to be able to do or cope with in their life. And after that, you know, it's, you know, that you've only given, you don't give them enough tools and they have problems.
The third question for you tonight is from Danny. And the question is, do you use a special bottle for the puppies and do you have to burp the puppies?
Well, yeah. You know, sometimes you got to burp them a little bit. Generally, you don't. But if they have aspirated or sucked too hard and got too much milk, you've got to. Sometimes, you know, when that does happen, and not that it's happened to me, but I know of cases that it has happened, that they've got milk in their lungs, and you've got to hold their little heads and hold their feet and hold their bodies, and you got to sling that stuff out of them like you're slinging a rag. You got to get it out of them. As far as the bottle goes, like we said before, I use a regular standard issue baby bottle, and just like you feed a little baby kid, and you adjust the nipple flow with a hot needle, and you'll have to get you two or three nipples because you're probably going to screw one of them up. When they get old enough to start sucking formula with a little baby rice in it, I'll take a hot, a real sharp knife and shove it and cut a little slit in it to where they can really, really get after it when they get older. But, yeah, you got to customize all your little bottles. And when you do it repeatedly year after year, you get your favorites, and, boy, I mean, you take care of that little sucker.
All right, your fourth question is from Greg, and it is, at what age would you recommend my wolf dog be spayed or neutered? I've heard so many different things, it's confusing who to believe. Thank you.
Well, you know, there's the growth factor. And when you spay or neuter your animals, you're removing one of the hormone producers for their bodies. You typically, the ideal situation in my eyes is that you fix them right before they go into their first heat. By then, they usually have their growth. Of course, high contents, that's usually 2 years of age. by then they're pretty much as tall as they're going to be. So as far as age goes, you know, low contents, 9 months old. High contents, they're by November of their second year. You know, they're
fertilized
by December.
So you want to get them, usually you want to spay or neuter typically before they go into that first heat, because once the hormones are released, you may have a whole different animal than what you would have beforehand.
That's right, and they're there for a while.
All right, Jerry, your fifth question is from another Dan, and it is, why do you pull puppies so early? New studies have come out stating that the parent's immunity may take up to 2 weeks to be passed on. And if puppies are pulled or weaned, we could be putting them at risk. This is just for dogs, but thought it might be the same for wolf dogs, so I wanted to ask. Thank you.
Well, these animals, I don't know anything about that study. It could be true. But these animals are sequestered in a sterile environment. That's the idea of having your hands washed and shoes off at the door, because you can track all kinds of parvo, distemper, all kinds of stuff in on your feet, and you'd never even know it. Cleaning your hands, very important. And so, therefore, that negates any problem at all. And, you know, the first puppy shot eats up the mother's immune system that she's passed on to the puppies. That first shot gobbles it up. And that starts what is called an immunogenic reaction, and the puppy forms its own antibodies and white cells to fight that whatever it is comes into its system. And the second shot is what actually helps it to affirm and develop an immunity to whatever you're giving it a shot for.
Very good. The sixth question is from Arnett, and she says, I want to be a breeder. How do I start?
She wants to be
a
wolf dog breeder.
Answers.
Boy, I mean to tell you, first thing you need to go get a general consensus from everybody to see if you're crazy or not. Well, you know, experience. You've got to get some experience. You got to learn wolf dogs. You can't start having wolf dogs by being a breeder. That's not how you start. You know, that's how you end up. Because a lot of times, you know, you raise a few wolf dogs and you may just have second thoughts on ever wanting to be a breeder. You don't start off by being a breeder. Then you got to find some decent lines to breed, which means you have to find some people that have lineages. And some people call it pedigrees. It's the same damn thing. To know the propensities for behavior, health, disposition, the whole nine yards. You don't produce wolf dogs just to make a wolf dog. You're supposed to be producing a particular wolf dog. Therefore, you have to have a goal. You have to have a plan. What are you going to create? What colors, tall animals, mid contents, high contents, low contents, what mixes do you prefer? Husky crosses, German Shepherd crosses, Malamute crosses. There's just a whole Bojangle bucket full of whatever it is in the world out there anymore. And you need to be particular. You need to produce something that's exceptional. There's enough mystery wolf dogs and average Joe Blow wolf dogs running around in the world for everybody to have one already. And you want to stand out from the herd. You want to be an exception to the rule. You have to have that dedication. You have to have the right property. The property has to be in the right location. There's neighbors. There's cows. There's horses for neighbors. And everything that can entice these animals to do whatever. have to have the proper enclosures, separation, quarantines, somewhere to put them when they're sick. There's a lot to it if you're going to do it right. Otherwise, you're just going to be another backyard breeder in the wolf dog world, and ain't that special.
And we all know that you really don't make any money when you sell puppies, because typically you break even with the cost of the formula and the time that you put into the puppies and,
it's not so much that, you know. Formulas aren't all that expensive, and if your animals are healthy, you don't have that many vet bills. But you've got, you know, you consider just like my place. I would grant you, over the years, I probably have $250,000 in fencing material and replacing this, replacing that, chewed up dog houses, dog food, just you name it. And, you know, you'll never have enough litters to cover your cost. And you do it,
sure.
You do it as a passion. You do it from your heart. You do it from your soul. You're producing a life. You're reproducing your babies. My animals were my pets first and foremost, whether they never had a puppy or not. And from time to time, I've bred them. I sure have. I haven't bred them every year. I took 7 years off one time, strictly because I needed to refocus and make sure what I was doing was the right thing. And you keep the animals' interest first and foremost, and you won't go wrong. And your interest in all this is last. And if there's any money left over, that's fine and great and good. And if there's not, well, then you didn't expect any to begin with. You don't breed wolf dogs.
Another important thing to add to that, Jerry, is also having the ability to take back anything that you produce that may need to come back to you, which a lot of breeders
absolutely
don't put thought into.
Absolutely. Whether you think so or not, whether you got an excuse for it or not, or if this happened and that happened, that's all horse shit and gun smoke. You are forever responsible for what you have produced and brought to this world as a life.
Very good advice.
They would not have been here if it was not for you. And I'll tell you straight up, I don't produce these animals to go somewhere and live like shit and suffer for the rest of their life, because I made a mistake. And I have made a mistake or two. It's inevitable. It's something that you just have.
You have taken them back, and we know, you know, we know.
I'll take
that
back
you have
any animal I've ever produced. I'll take back any animal I have ever produced.
That's an important thing. You know, if you want to be a breeder, you have
absolutely
to have enough space to be able to be responsible. And things happen, just as in rescue. Like my situation with my two low contents that were adopted out and had to come
mm-hmm.
back, and you know,
that's right.
They've been back 2 years. But, yep. So it's like, you know, you have to be responsible for what you adopt out or what you create, and so that's very important for Miss Arnett. If you're looking into being a breeder, definitely make sure that you are willing to and have the availability to take back anything that you create, because situations change for even the most perfect of homes, and sometimes
that's right
things happen and you have to take them back. So with that being said, Gary, I want to thank you for everything. I want to thank you for your intelligence and your advice, and we really appreciate you being on the show tonight. I think that this
well,
is
well I hope I made some
show.
Kind of sense.
Yeah, you definitely did. I'm gracious. I even learned some more things tonight. I always learn. I think we all do, but I appreciate you being on. We will be back after these words from Project Coyote.
Hi, my name is Camilla Fox, and I'm the founder and executive director of Project Coyote. And I started Project Coyote in 2008 with the aim of bringing together scientists and educators, predator-friendly ranchers and citizen leaders with the sole focus on shifting the way that we view and treat carnivores and promoting coexistence through compassionate conservation. And in all of our six core programs, we use science, education, and advocacy ultimately to reform predator management at the federal, state, and local level, and to really shift the way that we manage predators from indiscriminate killing to coexistence. So I hope you'll join us and join Project Coyote today and join our E-team, get involved, see what you can do in your community, and become part of our pack. We're growing and we'd welcome you to our pack. Thank you.
Wolf Dog Radio, four paws on the ground, eyes on the moon, and nothing but the truth.
One of our nearest segments is Operation Rescue. If you are a rescue or a sanctuary or a place animals from rescue efforts and wish to be showcased on Wolf Dog Radio, please send your request to producers@wolfdogradio.com.
I would love to discuss a couple of things that I have seen being the director of a sanctuary rescue organization in order to help the wolves and wolf dogs that we love so much. Every year at puppy season, the rescue groups cringe at all the postings of new litters and pending breedings because we know the results that historically follow. Folks who do not have the right animals and the right experience producing pups and selling to whoever comes across with the cash. That ends up with the number of animals needing rescue to increase. Now, I'm not against breeders, but with a capital B-U-T, I see a very big gap in the education of the owners. I think collectively, as a community, we should all be responsible for properly assisting new folks and inexperienced people with a good quality program of wolf dog ownership guidelines. Like, for instance, the first wolf dog, real wolf dog that you buy from a breeder, not a rescued animal, should not be the animal you choose to breed as he or she turns a year old. I'm someone who loves to learn. I've had in my past that thrill-seeking personality type. That's why firefighting appealed so much to me. And when I started that career, I had zero experience or knowledge. So at first, I joined a volunteer organization and started training and saw that, yes, in fact, I did have an interest to continue this as a full-time job. Then I put my applications in and began the process to get hired as a professional firefighter. Even after I was out of recruit training and working in the field, I started taking university-level courses in fire management, construction, and incident command. The learning on different levels was very important in addition to the experience out in the field of running calls and mitigating emergencies. The point being that different experiences and types of learning was necessary in order to become a well-rounded firefighter. And this is the same at what it takes to be a well-rounded, educated wolf dog owner. I think as a community, it would be a great team project to put together an educational, informational system that we could all utilize. Not only would it benefit the prospective owners for breeders to utilize, but it could help rescue groups with adopters. We need these animals to stay in quality homes with the right enrichment, whether they're bought or adopted, and also have a safety net from where they came from. So if it doesn't work out, we still know the owners were educated. It would be a great project to bring the community together in a team effort to help our animals. The connections made would be immense across the country. Another short point I would like to make continues into the realm of connections. The name of our organization is In Harmony with Nature, and it's reflective of our philosophies. People have gotten to a place that they have forgotten that the animals and nature are here as our teachers. We are connected and can learn so much by opening our awareness. When we forget and start to act as we are the ones who know, we get in trouble, and it will make a life experience much harder to deal with. If we keep this at the forefront of our thoughts, then we will find good in every situation and learn from it. Be a student of nature. Life is an experience, no matter whether you want to call it a good one or a bad one. It's your own perception. But the wolf or wolf dog teachers that we live with are really working hard to help you see it as a good experience if you're willing to open your awareness and that connection to all life in nature. It really is all about connectedness. We receive animals in rescue, and it does bring people together if you keep connectedness in mind as opposed to becoming the judgmental hater. We don't know the reasons an animal winds up with us, but it's a connection, and it could open the door to an amazing experience that you could never have imagined if all you thought was, oh, wow, this poor animal. Well, that poor animal is here to bring you some gifts if you will actually listen. And that's my tidbit in a nutshell from Kim Capes at In Harmony with Nature.
It's time for Wolf Dog Radio News with Greg Largent.
Good evening. This is Greg Largent, and this is the edition of In the News for Wolf Dog Radio. Part of tonight's reading is from Earth Justice, January 18th of this year. As we all know and have seen on Facebook and in the news, there are currently two bills in Congress to call to delist the wolf in four states. Senate Bill 164 was introduced on January 17th by Senator Ron Johnson, Republican from Wisconsin, and House of Representatives Bill 424 was introduced on January 10th by Representative Colin C. Peterson, Democrat from Minnesota. If the legislation passes both chambers and gets signed by the president, it would turn over the fate of wolves in Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Wyoming to states whose management wolf plans that two federal courts have ruled inadequate to securing the species at legally required population levels in absence of Endangered Species Act protections. In Wyoming, this would allow the state to resume a hostile management program that allowed for unlimited shoot-on-site killings of wolves across 85% of the state. The legislation, if passed, would further strip citizens of the right to challenge these lethal programs in court. The appeals process of two federal court decisions, protections to wolves, decisions on those cases are expected any day. The following is a statement from Marjorie Mulhall, who's the senior of counsel at Earth Justice. A new Congress has resurfaced an old vendetta against imperiled wolves. If this legislation is signed into law, wolves in Wyoming will be subjected to unregulated killing across the vast majority of the state. And even on the borders of Yellowstone National Park, numerous legal loopholes will authorize widespread wolf killing. Americans widely hailed the return of wolves to the Northern Rockies two decades ago as a triumph of the Endangered Species Act. But now this War on Wolves Act, as it's been called, would allow for the same unregulated killing that nearly wiped out the species in the first place. Politicians should not meddle in the science-based listing status of a particular species at any stage or any species, but not in especially bad time as these cases are still playing out in the courts. We urge those who support the protection of wolves to call their senators and representatives and tell them to vote down this lethal legislation, end quote. And the following is from Wolf Dogs or Douglas County, Wisconsin.com. A joint statement from Senator Tom Tiffany of Hazelhurst and State Representative Adam Jarchow of Balsamo said, the overpopulation of gray wolves in Wisconsin, Wisconsin's landscape is harming farmers, hunters, and residents of rural Wisconsin. Last August, the State Department of Natural Resources said a number of hunting dogs killed by wolves for the year. As of the close of Wisconsin's bear season in October, at least were confirmed killed by wolves for exceeding the previous record of 23. And the source for this is www.host.madison.com. Let's do some fact-checking, shall we? During the 2016 Wisconsin bear hunt season, 37 hunting dogs were lost in a pursuit of bear. A few Wisconsin legislators these deaths due to the high wolf population of 866 in 2016. A whole lot more of this story than meets their eye. Adrian Weideven, former Wisconsin DNR head wolf biologist, wrote in an opinion editorial, "Numbers don't add up in wolf-hound debate," which was written on November 12th. And he also suggested that do wolf numbers correlate with wolves killing hounds? The evidence suggests this might not necessarily be the case. In 2012, only 7 dogs were killed, and yet there were nearly as many wolves in 2012 as there were in 2016. There were 850 wolves in late winter of 2012. That is a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel January 2017 article. What could be causing the high deaths of hunting hounds? It's a mystery as to just how many dogs are in pursuit of bears running through during training and hunting. Why is it a mystery? Because the change in regulations took place to remove Class B bear training and hunting licenses. Because of that change, it's impossible to know just how many dogs that are in pursuit of bear are running through the woods because they are unregulated. Wolves are defending their pups against free-range hunting dogs in the pursuit of the bear. This is because wolf pups are born around mid-April and are approximately 2.5 months at the time Wisconsin bear hunters begin training dogs on bear starting on July 1st. Typically, wolves leave their pups at a rendezvous for safekeeping to be watched by better. The pup's family members keep a close eye on the rendezvous site while hunting. And this is a quote from the WODCW blog. This conflict between bear hunters and wolves continues in the north woods of Wisconsin. It's become one of the reasons Wisconsin legislators want to deal with wolves. One such Wisconsin legislator stated, "We're seeing depredations where depredations have almost doubled this year, and it's not just hunting dogs, it's people's pets," said State Senator Tom Tiffany. "They're expanding through the state, and we're beginning to see it. It's a really big problem." This source is WRBX.com, the wolf management. "There is no big bad wolf here to blame. However, there is a lack of regulations with bear hunting and training, and has led to a conflict between wolves and bear hunters. Once the training and hunting SB license was removed, that change allowed for an undetermined number of dogs running through wolf habitat. That could be definitely the cause of the 37 bear hunting dog deaths. Are wolves decimating the white-tailed deer in Wisconsin? Wolves are not eating all the deer. All one needs to do is take a look at the news releases from the Wisconsin Natural Resources Department for Wisconsin's annual 9-day gun deer hunt, and they'll see the increase in the statewide buck harvest posted on November 18th of 2016, which says that the largest change in buck harvest occurred in the northern forest zone. There was a 30% increase from 2015, which was mainly because after 2 consecutive mild winters and limited antlerless days. What we are asking everyone to do is research on your own regarding this important topic. Look and read the resources that are stated by both sides of the aisle and both sides of this issue. What sense, or dare anyone ask, that common sense prevail with the delisting of any species protected under the Endangered Species Act? To have to place that species back on the EGSA listings if that species is allowed to be hunted and that's the point, again, needing protection. Managed with a plan in mind for the preservation of all species. Ask yourself these questions. What requirements be met for each state before wolves can be delisted under the ESA? Number of animals within a state is what? The number of animals within a geographical region of a state as compared to the total number of wolves within a state? Good question. Is it the number of breeding pairs within a state? A combination, any of the three? Are there any other requirements that have to be met? Those are just the questions dealing with the ESA. They don't deal with hunting for only for or about wolves or the use of dogs in any state. If you don't know the answers, we ask that you research the topic so you could make an informed, educated decision. Well, Wolf Dog Radio, appreciate you listening.
Thank you, Greg. And that's the news for tonight. And now we have a message from Texas Wolf Dog Project.
Wolf Dog Radio, 4 paws on the ground, eyes on the moon, and nothing but the truth.
Hello, this is Natasha Woodall. Vice President of Texas Wolf Dog Project and Shelter. We are an all-volunteer and donation-based 501c3 rescue and adoption facility dedicated to saving as many adoptable wolf dogs and northern breed dogs in the state of Texas, as well as surrounding areas. This is based off of available foster homes, suitable adoptive homes, and, of course, financial resources for veterinary care. We support responsible ownership and public education, as well as promoting education for other rescue groups, shelters, and animal control facilities concerning proper wolf dog identification, evaluation, and care. For more information on adoption, events, volunteer work, and how to donate, please visit our website at www.texaswolfdogproject.org or email us at info@texaswolfdogproject.org or visit us on Facebook. Thank you.
This is Justine, and you are listening to Wolf Dog Radio. I would like to thank Jerry Mills for his time and dedication with and for Wolf Dog. Jerry, would you like to share any closing thoughts with our listeners tonight?
Well, all I can say is it's a buyer beware market out there. Be careful. Be sure of what you're doing before you do it, and don't let some cute little picture somewhere, some cute little puppy, get you into something you're not ready for. Prior planning, that's the ticket.
Thank you, Jerry. We enjoyed you on the show tonight.
Thank you, Krista.
I would also like to thank our wonderful listeners for your time and dedication to our show. We owe our growing audience a debt of gratitude and our thanks. A special shout out to our listeners in Brisbane, Australia. G'day, mates. If we see that our care for wolf content animals don't seek the advice and knowledge of those that have spent more time raising, rearing, and working with these so loved animals, we will be missing a great opportunity to utilize the knowledge and the insights they possess. We need to seek their counsel, ask questions, and listen to their experiences and how they've resolved issues with their animals and what has worked for others. Passing the torch of knowledge is easy. All we have to do is ask. I want to thank Jerry again for his insights and sharing the knowledge to us all. As in all things, seek the advice of a veterinarian if you have any questions regarding your companion's health or have health-related issues with your animals. If you have any questions about the show, please email us at questions@wolfdogradio.com and come check out our website at www.wolfdogradio.com for more information. Please remember, life is short. Hug your babies. Good night and be blessed.